Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Numbers chapter 32. I'm going to do the entire chapter, verses 1 through 42, and I will entitle this chapter Reuben and Gad in Gilead. Our context is this: in chapter 31, our immediately preceding chapter, we looked at Israel taking God's vengeance out on Midian for seducing, for leading the daughters of Moab and themselves, the daughters of Midian, in seducing the children of Israel into worshiping at Baal Peor, worshiping the god of Baal at Mount Peor. Horrible situation, and the Midianites got thumped pretty soundly by the Israelites. And so now we're ready to start with Numbers chapter 32, starting with verse 1. Now the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad had an exceedingly large number of livestock. So when they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that it was indeed a place suitable for livestock, comma, I'm going to stop in the middle of this sentence here because that's where verse 1 ends, and we need to look at a bunch of geography, and this can drive you crazy if you let it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start out with a general description of the land to the east of the Jordan River. I'm going to give names of the area that were traditionally named by the aboriginal tribes that were there. I say aboriginal, the Moabites and the Ammonites, let's say that. So if we look at Zered, the brook that runs into the southern tip of the Dead Sea, south of that is Edom, north of that is the beginning of Moab. You go halfway up the Dead Sea. Well, again, we're on the eastern side now. We go halfway up the Dead Sea and we have the Arnon River. That's Moab. And then going from the Arnon to Heshbon, which is right at the tip of the northern tip of the Dead Sea, Heshbon, well-known city there, that still belongs to Moab. So now you go from Heshbon halfway up to the Sea of Galilee, along going on the eastern edge of the Jordan Valley, you end up at the Jabbok River. So from Heshbon to Jabbok, that would be Ammon, where the Ammonites were. And then if you go north from the Jabbok and you keep going north till you get to the Yarmouk, which is the southern tip of the Sea of Galilee, that's the land that became known as Bashan, as in Og of Bashan. And actually, you keep going from the Jabbok River all the way up to past Lake Hula, up to Mount Hermon in the north, right on the southern edge of Lebanon. That's also Og of Bashan's land. So that's the general geography. Now we see here in verse 1, now the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad. So we're going to look at Reuben and Gad working together here. I'm going to tell you eventually how their land was distributed on the east of the Jordan River. Manasseh jumped in later. Manasseh is not mentioned here, but when Reuben and Gad cut a deal with Moses, they said, look, we'll go over and fight on the west side of the Jordan River if you let us come back after we beat the Canaanites, come back and possess all this land on the east of the Canaanites. We'll fight for you. And Moses said, that's fine. And Manasseh jumped in on that deal at the end. So we end up now with the general geographical features that I've just mentioned. And I need to mention another one. The term Gilead shows up a lot, and that's very easy. You just look at the Jordan River from the Sea of Galilee running south through the Dead Sea, and the valley of the Jordan River is in gray on the map. And then as you go east a little bit, out of the Jordan River Valley, you hit a low mountain range, a range of hills. That's Gilead. So from the Dead Sea to the Red Sea on the east of the Jordan River is Gilead, which of course is used all the time in the scriptures, so you really should know that geographical feature. Now, again, with my geographical overview, let me give you now how the eastern tribes ended up in the land division. All right, halfway from the Arnon River, which is halfway from the southern to the northern tip of the Dead Sea on the east. The Arnon River runs into the Dead Sea there. That's cuts halfway through Moab. From the Arnon River north to Heshbon at the northern tip of the Dead Sea, Reuben got that piece of territory. He basically got half of Moab. And then as you go from Heshbon up to the Jabbok, which remember that's where the Ammonites used to be, well now Gad has got from Heshbon to the Jabbok. The Jabbok River runs into the Jordan River about a third of the way up the Jordan Valley going north to the Dead Sea. So now Gad has got that. Reuben to the south, Gad to the north. And Gad also, now the land between the Jabbok River and the Yarmouk River, the Yarmouk runs into the Jordan River right to the south of the southern tip of the Sea of Galilee. And that, of course, is, now we're talking about Gilead, to the east of the Jordan River there, that land of Gilead. Gad got half of that land, and East Manasseh got the other half, and it split diagonally. If you'll look at a map and see where the Jabbok River runs into the Jordan River, that's a right angle. And then if you draw a line from the southern tip of the Sea of Galilee to the Jabbok River, forming an hypotenuse of a right triangle, that right triangle belongs to Gad. Now, the rest of Gilead, between the Jabbok and the Yarmouk River, belonged to East Manasseh. And I know it's hard to picture this, and it's hard for me to describe it looking at a map, but if you look at a map and get familiar with these areas, it makes the geography a lot easier. And then as we go from the Yarmouk all the way up to Mount Hermon, that's East Manasseh, that's Bashan's old territory, the Amorite king that used to own it, but who got wiped out by the Israelites as they came up from Egypt. That's East Manasseh. So that's our general geography. Now, there are going to be a lot of individual cities, which I'm not really going to take time to locate. You can find most of those cities on a BibleAtlas.org map, which I've got in front of me. Of course, a lot of them have question marks by them, so they're not really sure where they are. It doesn't matter. They're just in the general area. Now, when the sons, going back to verse 1, Numbers 32, when the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad saw the land of Jazer, Jazer, according to my map here, is right across the Jordan River Valley from Jericho, a little bit north, and it's a question mark there. So it's somewhere in the land of Gad, as I've just described, right north of the northern tip of the Dead Sea to the east there. That's Jazer. So when they saw the land of Jazer in the land of Gilead, as I said, that valley from the Sea of Galilee to the Dead Sea to the east, there was indeed a place suitable for livestock. Now, that's why Reuben and Gad wanted this land, is because it's so fertile. Now, of course, by them wanting that land, it makes it look like they don't want to fight. They don't want to go in and beat the Canaanites, because the Amorites have already been beaten by the Israelites. The land has been pacified. They want to take it easy and get that land. James and Fawcett Brown say of Gilead, quote, "It has always been famous for its rich and extensive pastures, and it is still the favorite resort of the Bedouin shepherds, who frequently contend for securing to their immense flocks the benefit of its luxuriant vegetation." We go now to Numbers 32, verses 2 through 5. "The sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben came and spoke to Moses and to Eleazar the priest, and to the leaders of the congregation, saying, Ataroth, Dibon, Jazer, Nimrah, Heshbon, Elaelah, Sebam, Nebo, and Beon, the land which the Lord conquered before the congregation of Israel is a land for livestock, and your servants have livestock. They said, if we have found favor in your sight, let this land be given to your servants as a possession. Do not take us across the Jordan." Now, Moses is spoken to by the leaders of Gad and Reuben. Of course, Eleazar the priest was there too, as well as the leaders of the congregation. I'm assuming one leader per tribe. Maybe I'm wrong, but just to make it easy. Eleazar, of course, is the high priest that's taken over from Aaron, because Aaron has already died. He died before the big battle with the Midianites and the Amorites on the east side of the Jordan River. And so the sons of Gad and of Reuben named these towns there. And I'm not going to go through all these towns. You can find them on the map I just told you, BibleAtlas.org. These cities, of course, were originally owned by the Amorites, as John Gill and Adam Clark say, and they were taken from their king Sihon. And so they were conquered, and so Gad and Reuben says, we want them. Notice how polite they are when they ask Moses and Eleazar and the other leaders of the congregation. They said, if we have found favor in your sight. Were they being obsequious? Were they being nice or just polite? Well, I don't know, but they are at least polite, and I'm sure they realize the political ramifications of this. We are asking to opt out of a war so that we can peacefully settle down in this rich pasture land. Now we're going to see how Moses responds here, verses 6 through 12, Numbers 32. "But Moses said to the sons of Gad, and to the sons of Reuben, shall your brothers go to war while you yourselves sit here? Now why are you discouraging the sons of Israel from crossing over into the land which the Lord has given them? This is what your fathers did when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. For when they went up to the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, they discouraged the sons of Israel so that they did not go into the land which the Lord had given them. So the Lord's anger burned in that day, and he swore, saying, none of the men who came up from Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. For they did not follow me fully. except Caleb the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite, and Joshua the son of Nun, for they have followed the Lord fully. Now what we're seeing here is Moses is having a flashback to the unfortunate incident when the Israelites, after being in the wilderness for about 2 years, having left Egypt, they were at Kadesh Barnea. They were just poised to enter into the promised land. Moses sends out 12 spies. 10 of them come back and say, "We can't take this land. We're like grasshoppers in their sight. There are giants everywhere." He refers to the valley of Eshcol that the spies came from. Remember, they gathered a big clump of grapes, big, huge grapes, showing how prosperous the land was. Eshcol means grapes. "For when they went up to the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, then they discouraged the sons of Israel." In other words, despite all the fruitfulness of the land, the size of the inhabitants, the giants, the military difficulties that they encountered, convinced the Israelites that they should not go, should not follow Moses into the promised land. And thus they were trying to thwart God's will, which was to give the Israelites the promised land. And God was very angry about that. He says, okay, from that time on, anybody that's 20 years and old and upward, you're not going to see the promised land. You're going to die in the desert, and the sand's going to cover your corpses. And the reason I'm going to do that, he says in verse 11, is because these people, these rebellious Israelites who listened to the bad report of the 10 spies, they did not follow me fully. And I always think that's a little bit understated. They didn't follow me fully. Well, I guess they followed him to get to Kadesh Barnea, but they were rebelling the whole way, griping about, remember the Taberah where the outskirts of the camp would burn up because of the grumbling of the people. Remember the quail, they griped about the quail, then they griped about the manna because it wasn't good enough. Then they griped about the lack of water before Moses struck the rock at Rephidim, and on and on and on. They're griping, moaning and groaning. So, no, they didn't follow the Lord fully. I guess they followed the Lord well enough to get them to Kadesh Barnea. Well, all of this Moses is thinking about, and he hears the sons of Gad and Reuben saying they're not going to go over. Oh, my gosh. This is just going to be like it is before. They're going to be too scared to fight the Canaanites. Now, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that Moses' tough speech here may have dissuaded the two tribes, Reuben and Gad, from their original intention. Their original intention may have been to possess Transjordan without going into Canaan to fight. Well, we'll see later that, well, we don't know what their original intention was, but we see that they will agree to go in and fight if they can come back and get their land after the battle's over, if they can cross back over to the east. Now, Moses blames the fathers, your fathers, for listening to the bad report of the 10 spies. He's not talking about the fathers of Reuben and Gad. He's talking about the fathers of all the Israelites, because all Israel failed to listen to those spies. Moses is here afraid that the failure of Reuben and Gad to enter into the land would start a general revolt, as the NIV Study Bible says, so that eventually no one would want to go in and fight to take the land. So, I mean, you could look at it one way and say, okay, well, we'll just leave you over here. You can take the cities here in the Transjordan area, and the other 10 tribes will go in and fight and get their tribes. Fair enough. It sounds like that would be fair, but Moses is thinking ahead. What if everybody chickens out and says, we're not going to go into Canaan. We want to share the land over here with Reuben and Gad. Moses said the earlier Israelites at Kadesh Barnea had not followed God fully. John Gill says if they would have followed fully, they would have gone straight in and possessed Canaan. Deuteronomy 1:21, in the rehash of all these events, we read this: "See, the Lord your God has placed the land before you. Go up, take possession, as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has spoken to you. Do not fear or be dismayed." That's what they should have done, gone in. Well, they failed at Kadesh Barnea, and now Moses is scared they're going to fail again. One little minor point here before we go. Caleb is called the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite. Question here is Caleb a Kenizzite or is Jephunneh a Kenizzite? And who is a Kenizzite? Well, it's not clear whether it's Caleb or Jephunneh being referred to here. Caleb, the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite. Is it Caleb the Kenizzite, the son of Jephunneh, or is it Caleb the son of Jephunneh who is a Kenizzite? I'm sure you're really worried about this. John Gill says it's not easy to determine, but it's probably Jephunneh is the son of the Kenizzite. Adam Clark definitely says it was Jephunneh who was the Kenizzite, not Caleb. This takes care of problems as to who Caleb's ancestors were, a very complicated issue which I'm not interested in. Anyway, minor point. So we go down to Numbers 32:13-15. "So the Lord's anger burned against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years, until the entire generation of those who had done evil in the sight of the Lord was destroyed. Now behold, you have risen up in your father's place, a brood of sinful men." That's a good way to win friends and influence people. Call them a brood of sinful men. You have risen up to add still more to the burning anger of the Lord against Israel. For if you turn away from following him, he will once more abandon them in the wilderness, and you will destroy all these people. You see, Moses is worried about not just about the Reubenites and the Gadites. He's worried about all the other people who are going to follow them, disobey God, and be destroyed, because God's not going to protect them unless they're in the promised land, because that was the land of promise. Now, Moses says that they were wandering in the wilderness 40 years. We don't need to take that precisely. That's a round number, because they wandered actually from Kadesh Barnea, which was about 2 years into the Exodus. It was 40 years since the time they left Egypt. So that's close enough, even though technically they didn't wander while they were marching toward Kadesh Barnea. They were just marching through the wilderness. They started wandering after Kadesh Barnea. So it was actually 38 years, roughly. So, but that's a round number. When Moses says, once more, you're going to be abandoned by God in the wilderness. In verse 15, once more, he's referring to how they were abandoned by God in the wilderness when they refused to take the land after the report of the 10 spies. And so he's saying the same thing is going to happen again, once more. We go to Numbers 32, verses 16 through 19. Then they approached him and said, that's they being Reuben and Gad's leaders, approached him, approached Moses, and said, we want to build sheepfolds here for our livestock and cities for our dependents. But we will arm ourselves and be ready to go ahead of the Israelites until we have brought them into their place. Meanwhile, our dependents will remain in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return to our homes until each of the Israelites has taken possession of his inheritance. Yet we will not have an inheritance with them across the Jordan, that means to the west of the Jordan, and beyond, because our inheritance will be across the Jordan to the east. Verse 16, Gad and Reuben say they want to build sheepfolds. That's probably more properly repair sheepfolds. They didn't have enough time to build sheepfolds from agricultural buildings from scratch. They didn't have time for that. It just means repair, because they had conquered all this from the pagans that were living in the land. John Gill says there were plenty of sheepfolds and cities on the east of Jordan. So the word probably means repair. We want to repair sheepfolds. I remember in Chinese, there is one word for build and repair. And so every time somebody would say something about they're building a road in the city, and I'm thinking, is this a new road or are they fixing an old road? I never would know. I'd have to ask all the time, well, what are you talking about? It's just some languages are ambiguous at certain points, and apparently Hebrew is here too. So it probably means to rebuild sheepfolds. As Adam Clark says, quote, it was impossible for these, numerous as they might be, to build cities and fortify them for the defense of their families in their absence. It's impossible to build them. They had to rebuild them. Clark continues, Calmet, quoting, he's quoting a commentator named Calmet. Calmet supposes they meant no more than repairing the cities of the Amorites which they had lately taken, which work might have been very easily accomplished in the time which they spent on this side of Jordan. All right, so we go to verse 17. Gad and Reuben say, we will arm ourselves and be ready to go cross the Jordan River with the rest of the Israelites. This was to show that they were not cowards, to show that they were not putting their interest ahead of Israel. So they did the politic thing. I don't know if they wanted to do the politically correct thing, but they did. Now in verse 17, he says, our dependents, that means that their women and children, would remain in the fortified cities on the eastern side. That means that they had to leave troops there to protect them. They wouldn't have been safe without military protection, as Adam Clark says. So many of these, of the soldiers of Gad and Reuben had to be left behind to protect the women and children. Clark calculates 70,580 soldiers were left behind. How he does that, I do not know. He says, Clark says, there were 40,000 who crossed the Jordan. Well, that sounds like they left more soldiers behind than they went across. But it doesn't matter. They sent enough to satisfy Moses. And so the dependents remain in the fortified cities on the eastern side. Why? Because of the inhabitants of the land. That means the people that had already been conquered, the Ammonites, the Moabites, the Edomites, and also what's left of the Amorites, Sihon and Og, and also the Midianites who were thumped in the plains of Moab by the Israelites, but there were still people behind, and they could have caused the families of Reuben and Gad trouble they had to be protected against. Notice how in verse 19, how confident the leaders of Gad and Asher sound about the prospects of the other tribes conquering the promised land. Verse 18, I should say, we will not return to our homes until each of the Israelites has taken possession of his inheritance. They were going to leave their women and children behind, and they said, we'll fight until the other 10 tribes have got their inheritance on the west side of the Jordan, and then we'll come back. So they were willing to leave their kids, sort of like hostages, their wives and their children, as hostages until the land was conquered. They were very confident about that. Of course, you could say they didn't have much choice because Moses is breathing fire and brimstone on their heads. But like I say, they did the right thing. Whether they did it under compulsion or not, I'm not prepared to say, but they did the right thing. They say, we'll stay over on the west until you guys conquer the land. We go to Numbers 32, verses 20 through 24. So Moses said to them, if you will do this, if you will arm yourselves before the Lord for the war, and all of you armed men cross over the Jordan before the Lord until he has driven his enemies out from before him, and the land is subdued before the Lord, then afterward you shall return and be free of obligation toward the Lord and toward Israel, and this land shall be yours for a possession before the Lord. That means the land on the east. They are on the eastern side, remember, still. They haven't crossed yet. And so when Moses says this land, he's talking about the land on the Transjordan area on the eastern side of the Jordan. Verse 23, but if you will not do so, behold, you have sinned against the Lord. If you don't go out crossing the Jordan River to the west, you have sinned against the Lord. And be sure, your sin will find you out. The wages of sin is death. Verse 24, build yourselves cities for your little ones and sheep folds for your sheep and do what you have promised. So Moses makes a formal agreement here, and it's very strongly worded, very positively worded. In verse 20, Moses says, if you will do this, if you'll go fight with us, and cross the Jordan and go to the west, if you will arm yourselves before the Lord for war. Now that preposition before is interesting because it could be an allusion to the order of march, which we talked about earlier in Numbers in one of the first several chapters. In the order of march, Reuben and Gad were in the front. They immediately preceded the ark as they marched. As John Gill and Numbers and Jameson Fawcett and Brown say, this is in Numbers 2, verses 10 through 31. And so that's what it could mean. Or it could just mean arm yourselves before the Lord in the presence of the Lord to promote the glory of the Lord, more general reference. We go now to Numbers 32, verses 25 through 30. The sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben spoke to Moses, saying, your servants will do just as my Lord commands. Our little ones, our wives, our livestock, and all our cattle shall remain there in the cities of Gilead, while your servants, everyone who is armed for war, will cross over in the presence of the Lord to battle, just as my Lord says. My Lord is referring to Moses. Verse 28, so Moses gave command concerning them to Eleazar the priest and to Joshua the son of Nun and to the heads of the fathers' households of the tribes of the sons of Israel. Moses said to them, if the sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben, everyone who is armed for battle, will cross with you over the Jordan in the presence of the Lord, and the land is subdued before you, then you shall give them the land of Gilead for a possession. But if they will not cross over with you armed, they shall have possessions among you in the land of Canaan. Now Moses gives this command to Eleazar and Joshua. Eleazar is the religious leader, the high priest. Joshua is, of course, the military leader. And then also the political leaders of the tribes, the heads of the tribes. He gives that command. So it seems that Moses has determined this case for himself, what we're going to do with Gad and Reuben. But perhaps he decided with the consent of all the other leaders. It's really not clear. Verse 29, however, we see that Moses is giving commands for the future. He says, if the sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben will cross over, then you will give them. That's because he knows he's not going. He knows he's already been told he's going to die before he crosses the Jordan. So this is all for Joshua and Eleazar to handle when they cross the Jordan River. He's not going to be there to enforce the division of the land and also the agreement of the military agreement of Gad and Reuben with the rest of the tribes. He's not going to be there to enforce all that. In verse 30, Moses says, now look, if they don't cross over with you armed with their arms, if they don't come across and go to the west to fight the Canaanites, they shall have possessions among you in the land of Canaan. In other words, if they don't go over to fight, they're not going to get the lands east of the Jordan. You're going to give them whatever's left over in the western land, and that's all that's going to be protected. Now, I suppose that Gad and Asher could have broken away from Israel and unilaterally taken lands in the east, but they wouldn't be able to protect those lands. I don't think they could have survived militarily doing this. They needed the military strength of all the 12 tribes. It would be a fatal weakening of their military might to do that. So Moses is saying, yeah, if they fight, you give them land in the east, in the Transjordan area. But if they don't fight, you make them come back over here to the west and be a part of Israel. Fair enough. We go now to Numbers 32, verses 31 through 33. The sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben answered, saying, "As the Lord has said to your servants, so we will do. We ourselves will cross over armed in the presence of the Lord into the land of Canaan, and the possession of your inheritance shall remain with us across the Jordan." So Moses gave to them, to the sons of Gad, and to the sons of Reuben, and to the half-tribe of Joseph's son Manasseh. Now Manasseh is mentioned for the first time here. So Moses gave to them the kingdom of Sihon, king of the Amorites, and the kingdom of Og. Now remember, the Amorites took over from the original inhabitants of the land, Moabites and Ammonites, whose possessions and territories I've already described. You need to look at a map, really. And so this is referring to the people who had it the most recently, before the Israelites thumped them. So Moses gave all this to Gad, Reuben, and half Manasseh, the land with its cities, with the territories, the cities of the surrounding land. Now, the reason it's called the half-tribe of Joseph's son Manasseh is because there was an East Manasseh and a West Manasseh. West Manasseh was across the Jordan to the west of the Jordan River, and East Manasseh was on this side of the Jordan River. And East Manasseh, if you'll think, going from Hermon all the way down to the Yarmouk River, and then partially on down to the Jabbok River, that's Manasseh to the east. We go down to Numbers 32, verses 34 through 42, and we will finish up this chapter. The sons of Gad built Dibon and Ataroth and Aroer and Atropha, Shophan and Jazer and Jogbaha and Beth Nimrah and Beth Haran as fortified cities and sheepfolds for sheep. The sons of Reuben built Heshbon and Eleala and Kiriatham and Nebo. That, of course, is the famous mountain that Moses, if it's the same mountain as Pisgah, that mountain died on, that Moses died on as he looked across the promised land. And Baal Meon, their names being changed. Now, why were their names changed? All these cities, which I'm not going to go over where they are. You can look at the map and see them. They're all over there in the Transjordan area. Their names have been changed because a lot of these names have the names of pagan gods in there. Nebo was Babylonian, it sounds like to me, Nebo. Baal is definitely the ancient Near Eastern, the Lebanese, the Phoenician Baal. And so they had to change the names. The Israelites are not going to have pagan names. One city I ought to mention, Dibon is a famous city in Moab. Aroer is, I always confuse the city. The Arnon River splits Moab right halfway up the Dead Sea from the south. Aroer is just to the north of the Arnon River, and Ar is just to the south of the Arnon River. So you got Ar, the southern city, Arnon the river, and Aroer, the northern city. Confusing. One city that's mentioned here is Sibmah. Now, Sibmah deserves a little notice here because it's famous for vines. Isaiah 16, 9 through 10, "Therefore I will weep bitterly for Jazer." We've already mentioned Jazer. That's a little bit further to the north there, right across from Jericho, a little bit north of Jericho on the eastern side. "For therefore I will weep bitterly for Jazer, for the vine of Sibmah." So that's a reference to the famous vines in Sibmah. "I will drench you with my tears, O Heshbon and Eleala." Those are two cities we just mentioned. Well, we're not going to get into Isaiah talking about Moab. Just mentioned Sibmah, famous for its vines. Let's go back to Aroer and use that as a method to describe the occupation of this land here, Moab. Adam Clark gives a history of the occupation. The first people recorded that we know about are the Emim, E-M-I-M. They were a warlike and perhaps gigantic people. They had that area around the Arnon River first. They were expelled by the Moabites, and the Moabites were then expelled by the Amorites. That would be Sihon, the king. And then the Amorites were expelled by the Israelites. Well, by golly, the Moabites appear to have gone back into the land and repossessed it in the days of Jeremiah. Now, Jeremiah is 600, 500 B.C., and Moses is 1400 B.C., so we're talking about, what, 7 or 8 centuries later? Jeremiah 48, 15 through 20, "Moab has been destroyed, and men have gone up to his cities. His choicest young men have gone down to the slaughter, declares the king, whose name is the Lord of hosts. The disaster of Moab will soon come." Well, isn't that interesting? Moab still managed to be around. Skipping down a little bit, verse 18, Jeremiah 48, "Come down from your glory and sit on the parched ground, O daughter dwelling in Dibon." There's that Moabite city again, "for the destroyer of Moab has come against you. Stand by the road and keep watch, O inhabitant of Aroer," A-R-O-E-R, Aroer. So there's that city again. Moab has been put to shame, for it has been shattered. Wail and cry out. Declare by the Arnon that Moab has been destroyed. And I think that's probably when the Babylonians came in, because that's when Jeremiah prophesied right before that. And that's the end of Moab. We don't hear about them too much anymore. Heshbon, I mentioned Heshbon a lot. That's right in Moab, right at the northern tip of the Dead Sea, to the east of the Dead Sea. That was the royal city of Sihon, king of the Amorites. And, of course, the Israelites have already captured that city. Machir is mentioned. We got Machir, Jair, and Nobah, sons of Manasseh, and they are distributed some territory. This is probably the son, the family, but not the head of the family. The head of the family was probably over 20 years old when at the rebellion of the 10 spies at Kadesh Barnea, and so they probably died in the wilderness. They're not going to make it, but it probably means their descendants are going to get this land in the Transjordan, Gilead. 41, Jair, the son of Manasseh, went and took its towns. That means Gilead's towns, and called him Havoth-Jair. Havoth is the village of Jair. So they got some land over there to the east. Now Nobah, verse 42, Nobah went and took Kenath in his village. Nobody knows who Nobah is. He was probably a descendant of Manasseh along with Jair and Machir. And that's the end of chapter 42. Difficult chapter because of all the geography. But now we're ready to go to chapter 33, Numbers 1 through 56. That chapter is a rehash of all of Israel's journey on the Exodus so far. It's sort of long, 56 verses. I'm not sure whether we can handle it all in one audio. I will see when we get there. But I hope you join with me as we go over chapter 33 of Numbers, and I hope you enjoyed chapter 32.